Your home for classic hits, 1570 AM, 96.9 FM, and now at 102.7 FM. This is WILO, Frankfurt, Lebanon, Delphi.
When you think of diamonds, what comes to mind?
Getting engaged.
Your wedding day.
A favorite anniversary. Diamonds tend to be associated with special memories. The next time you hear the word diamonds, you need to think of Vierks Fine Jewelry.
At Vierks, we have the area's largest and finest selection featuring hundreds of in-stock certified diamonds, all shapes and sizes, and specializing in a carat and larger.
And our prices and quality will meet or exceed anyone's, from the mall to the internet to even New York's Diamond District.
And for true expertise, Vierks has Lafayette's only GIA graduate gemologist in residence, along with the area's only, and we do mean only, USPAP compliant jewelry appraiser.
Let Vierks help make any occasion shine with the perfect diamond for your individual taste, style, and budget.
If you're serious about a diamond and serious about saving money, then you need to visit Vierks Fine Jewelry. Seriously.
Corner of 18th and Main, Lafayette, Vierks.com.
People ask a lot of questions about Ivy Tech Community College. Like, can an Ivy Tech degree get me a good career? Well, some say good, and some say great. In 2 years or less, you can earn an associate degree or certificate, qualifying you for some of Indiana's fastest-growing career fields and earning you an average of $37,777 the first year after graduation. Find your answers at ivytech.edu/FAQ. Then apply for free at ivytech.edu.
Looking for reliable heating and cooling services? Look no further than Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning, your independent American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. From residential and commercial services to generator maintenance and custom ductwork fabrication, they handle it all. Jim serves Clinton, Boone, and Carroll counties, including the nearby areas. Jim's is a family-owned business with an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau. Call Jim's today at 765-601-1461.
Jim here from Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning. Remember, trusted service and local excellence.
Did you know there are benefits to window tinting other than that cool and sleek look? Keeping your vehicle's interior protected is one of those benefits. Marchand's Window Tinting does top-quality window tint installation that comes with a lifetime warranty. Located on State Road 39 in Antioch, Marchand's Window Tinting is professional and locally owned with years of expertise.
This is Alan Marchand at Marchand's Window Tinting, and we stick it where the sun shines.
I've got great news for you. Hi, I'm Matt Lambert, CEO of Encompass Credit Union. Did you know becoming an Encompass member is easier than ever? If you live, work, attend school, or worship in Tipton, Clinton, or Howard counties, you're eligible to join. And not just you, but spouses, children, and parents of eligible folks can become members too. Plus, any business or organization in Tipton, Clinton, or Howard counties can also become a member. At Encompass Credit Union, we're all about community. Ready to join? Visit EncompassCU.org. Encompass Credit Union, community-minded, just like you.
Are you ready for a smoother ride? Head over to Big O Tires, the team you trust next to Parkies in Lebanon. Their expert team is dedicated to keeping you on the road with top-quality tires and exceptional service. Schedule your appointment today for a hassle-free experience. Call Big O Tires in Lebanon today. And don't forget to check Big O Tires out on Facebook for exclusive deals and updates. And like manager John and owner Alan always say...
And don't forget, go Cowboys.
Come on, John.
Hey, everyone, it's Rick with Freckles Graphics. You want to make a long-lasting impression without breaking the bank? Freckles Graphics is your one-stop spot for all your marketing needs with a wide range of services, including graphic design, screen printing, embroidery, embossing, laser etching, all your signage and promotional needs. Trust the pros at Freckles Graphics. We got you covered. Get what you want, how you want, and when you want it without sacrificing quality. Your satisfaction is guaranteed, so check us out at FrecklesGraphics.com. That's FrecklesGraphics.com, your partner in success.
Thanks for coming, elves. I've called this meeting because I don't know what to get Santa for Christmas this year.
Mrs. C, TC Trailers has everything Santa loves. They have over 300 trailers on the lot, a fully stocked parts store, and in-house repair shop. They even offer financing.
And did you know TC Trailers carries e-bikes and mopeds? Santa would love an e-bike for the off-season.
They carry barns and sheds, too. Santa was looking for a place to store more reindeer feed.
East of Frankfort, Estate Road 28 and 29, or TC-Trailers.com.
If you're not pulling a TC trailer, you're not pulling your weight.
Welcome back to Party Line on Boone's
we
Best.
We can wish.
1027 and WILO. Party line presented by our friends at Clinton Carroll, BoonCountyDailyNews.com, Jim's Heating and Air Conditioning, Freckles Graphics, Big Deals, Big O Tires in Lebanon, Ivy Tech Community College, Vierks Fine Jewelry, Marshan's Window Tinning, Encompass Credit Union, and TC Trailers. You can go back and watch the telecast on HoosierlandTV.com, and that's brought to you by Newell Gas, Welty Exteriors, Arborwood by Shoops, Freckles Graphics, Big O Tires in Lebanon, Shoops Country Foods, Sam I Am Carpet Cleaning, Solidarity Community Federal Credit Union, TC Trailers, Reinhardt Realtors, Day and Ginda Funeral Home, Coligan Water of Boone and Clinton County, The Farmers Bank, and 51 West Event Center. 765-659-3338 is the number to call in if you have questions or comments. And our guest starting at 9 o'clock here is Alan Dunn, who he asked me yesterday, which hat do I wear? I said, if you could just wear both of them, that would be great. So he is going to talk a little bit about the airport. He's on the Airport Authority Board, and he is also a county councilman for District 4. So let's start with the...
Yeah, I might throw a little agricultural question in there before you leave.
Too. Sure. That's all right. Sure. That's all right. You know, yeah. I tell people all the time, this is totally off topic, but I tell people all of the time, and I still take my dogs to the beautiful dog park in Michigan Town. And I don't know, a lot of folks know that your son did that for his Eagle Scout project.
Yes.
And I tell people, we have like the best dog park in Michigan Town. Parks, actually, because there's two sides depending on the size of your dog. But we are so fortunate to have that. And I don't know if he knows, for those of us that are pet lovers that take our animals out there, how appreciative we are. So pass that along to him.
I appreciate
that
the kind words.
That was a great project.
I will definitely do that. I know he's really proud of that.
He should be. And it's well done. It's nice. It's been kept up. And so those of us that use it are very thankful. So please pass that on.
Will do.
Let's talk a little bit about things happening at the airport. We don't get to hear about the airport a lot. So tell us a little bit about what's happening out there. You said right now is a little bit of a slower time. But in general, what happens out at the airport?
Well, I say a slower time in the sense that we're somewhat between projects. And maybe quickly, by way of review, we'll review that the airport is governed by an airport board, an airport authority board that is jointly appointed by the city and the county. So it's a little bit unique in terms of local governance. So there's three appointees by the county commissioners and three appointees by the mayor. So it's a really unique partnership between city and county. Now, it's its own taxing district. Whenever anyone gets their property tax bills, there is a line on there for the airport authority. But we've had this board has been in existence since 2012. That was the year that the countywide authority was created. And in that time, I feel like we've made a tremendous amount of project. You know, we've put up the new terminal with the large hangar, and then more recently we put up the second large hangar that is now the home to IU Lifeline, the air ambulance service. And at the completion of that second hangar, we've kind of paused. That seemed like, for lack of a better term, this was not officially how we looked at it, but that seems like the ending of phase one. And that was sort of the initial infrastructure build out. And now we're more at a pause and trying to think forward, where do we go next? What's going to be the focus, direction, and purpose of this airport? And then last year we had an opportunity that came out of the clear blue sky and we took advantage of, and that was that we got the opportunity to purchase some land behind the Tenneco factory, the old Mallory Controls factory, and that gives us some space between the runway and the backside of the Tenneco facility for future expansion. And with that, I think gave us an ability to start thinking about our airport's future a little differently than maybe we had thought in the past, because now we are not landlocked. We would have the ability to increase some hangar space and maybe even think in a little bit bigger picture way about our airport being the airport of choice for development in the LEAP district, for instance, or say as Lafayette continues to build south on 52, we're really closer to those places than anywhere else.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that's not anything that we have an official goal, that we have an official policy, that we have an official plan for, but it does start to open those things up. And that's kind of where we are right now. When I say we're pausing, it's not as though we're not active, but we are just sort of reassessing, maybe re-strategizing about what we want our focus to be.
talk about the runways a little bit out there. Are they long enough to increase the size of planes that come into that airport? Would we need to extend those? And how much is that? Because we see, especially in the summer months, obviously, and that's just because we're outside more in the summer months, but there's a lot of planes that actually come into that airport.
So it isn't a real economic development engine. We have several industrial park members that utilize our airport to bring in emergency parts. You know, if you have a breakdown at one of those factories and you're down for, you know, hours to days, that can be a lot of money. So they will fly in on an emergency basis to the airport parts. We have had in certain instances where a customer from one of the industrial park members wants an urgent delivery that they'll bring in cargo planes and send cargo out through our airport to get to a customer in a short time frame. So that's a really important thing. You ask a great question, and it's not as simple as you might think. Our main runway is 5,000 feet. That handles the vast majority of aircraft. If you do start to get into larger aircraft, say cargo type planes where you want to be able to send out larger loads, the issue is not as much the length, it's the thickness of the airport or of the runway on how much weight it can bear.
Oh.
And so we have, for the most part, the length to handle, you know, pretty much whatever we would need here. And we can even increase that further. And I think this is something that the board will look at as we approach the long-term review, pavement review periodically once a decade. And when we do that, I think the next time you can put grooves in that runway into that concrete. And that extends because of the way that what really restricts the length of the runway or the aircraft that can use a runway, pardon me, is how quickly they can stop in inclement weather. So when there's water or ice on that runway, by grooving it, you increase the friction on a time when there may be snow or ice, and you increase the ability of the water to get away. And so you can have bigger aircraft because they can stop faster on a grooved runway. So that's a relatively inexpensive upgrade that we can do to our runway without going to the expense of extending it to, say, 6,000 feet. So that's another one of the things that's on our radar. All of those things have to be run through the federal government because the FAA has to have a say because airport safety is such a critical thing that the FAA has to sign off on all of those things. And so there's a multi-year really process starting with environmental studies and moving on to safety studies and those kinds of things before the FAA would finally give that approval and most importantly agree to share in the cost funding of that project before it would ever happen.
You mentioned the LEAP project. Have you made contact with the folks down in Lebanon, Boone County yet to express our interest or maybe not an interest, but I think there's an interest there?
No, not directly. But I think that and a lot of the development that's going to happen in that LEAP district outside of the Lilly project that's already moving forward, we don't know what that's going to be yet. And so, you know, who we would even talk to, I'm not sure. Those would tend to be discussions that would happen with the industry or with the business itself. You know, do they have a flight department? You know, would they like to have a flight department? If they had a flight department, would they want to base the aircraft in Frankfurt, or would they just want to utilize the runway but base the aircraft in another location? So those are very development-specific questions that I don't think we're quite ready for. But what we need to be ready to do is know that we've got the infrastructure in place that if somebody says, yes, I would like to base an aircraft at the Frankfort-Clinton County Airport, that we know we've got the space to build a hangar and that we have the concrete to get it to the runway and we have the fueling to fill that plane and, you know, those kinds of things. And that's what we're kind of concentrating on now.
With the size of the airport that we have right now, what is our limitations as far as size of aircraft that can come in?
Well, you're getting a little more technical than I probably am qualified to answer. That's more of a question probably for the airport manager to get into that kind of level of detail. But I do know that we could take up to a Gulfstream G4, which is usually considered to be the largest corporate aircraft. If you were going to have, for instance, if staff from Plano, Texas at PepsiCo headquarters wanted to fly up to visit Frito-Lay, it's possible that they could come in a G4, and we can handle that. When you start getting into what's the limitations of, say, a cargo aircraft that could take material in or out, that's I have less expertise in that area. I'm not sure I could answer that one. But it's a pretty good sized plane. We can move a decent amount of product.
Yeah, I've seen some of them come in.
Yes,
especially
yes.
As Cindy said during the summer.
That's what's been so surprising. I think
yes,
is how much we can. tell us a little bit, you know, the new hangar that came in, I don't know, a few years back is being used for a lot of really cool things. I know there's some offices in there. Mm-hmm. So is that still being used? Are you thinking about adding anything to that? Tell us a little bit about that.
That building is a combination. It's a terminal, the terminal building and the hangar. And so I think more of what you're talking about is the terminal aspect of it. And it is the prime location, the business center, I guess, if you will, of the airport. It is used on a very regular basis. One of the things that was the airport's goal, and a goal of mine personally, because we are taxing the entire county, it was important to us that it was really a county asset and not the aviation community's asset. And so we have meetings, there's community meetings all the time in the meeting rooms that are a part of that terminal building. We try to host, you know, community events at least once a year, whether it's just the community day, or we have had the PBY, the plane that Adrian Marks flew. We had that in for the community to come and see. We've really tried to make that building a community-centered building. The actual hangar part is usually full. There's actually software that you can plug the different planes that you have to house, and it will lay them out to tell the management team how to park them so that you can get the wing.
Maximize the space.
Well, certain planes are taller than others, and you can actually get little planes underneath bigger planes and things like that. It's really fascinating. But we, generally speaking, that building is full of aircraft. But we have had occasions where we will pull those all out. And for instance, NHK will have their Christmas party in that hangar building. And it's a great facility for that. And it was designed for that. There's a kitchen in there that can be catered out of. And again, it goes back to that focus that the board had in our vision when we decided to move forward with that project, that we really wanted it to be a community oriented building.
I'll ask you kind of the same question I ask a lot of people. If you had a magic wand for the airport and unlimited money, or money was not an issue, what would you like to see happen out there?
Well,
because I feel like really it's pretty nice for what, I mean, we're not a huge town, but for our area, I still feel like it's a great area.
It is a hidden gem. It's an economic development. Well, I'm going to digress here slightly, but the analogy that I've used before is when you think about the recruiting of college athletes, blue chip athletes, and they take them to campus, what do? They show them the practice facilities and they show them all the amenities of what comes with the program. When we have economic development prospects come to Clinton County, we have them meet at the airport because we feel like that is a facility that is really maybe unappreciated by those of us that drive by it every day, but in the business community, we get a lot of wows. This is amazing. We didn't know that you had something like this. And so we show off that airport facility as a kind of an example of what we can do here in Frankfort and Clinton County in terms of economic development. So if there was one thing and all of those caveats, you know, FAA regulations, you know, we could get them all approved and money was not an object. There are certain improvements we could make that would take us to it. We're currently considered a general aviation airport, and I'm not even sure what the correct terminology is for the next level higher, but if you could get to that next level higher, you can have passenger service. And I've always just had a dream or a vision that once a week, you know, what if we had a regularly scheduled flight to Florida, you know, to the Fort Myers area?
Hello,
or something.
Sign me up for that.
Yeah, I mean, we just have so many people in this community that
or
go
Chicago
to Florida.
Chicago even.
Or
just a
Chicago.
Little,
That's a great example. I'm not talking about full-on service, but just a small once a week, one direction or the other, we're going to come and we're going to come back, go there and come back. I've always wanted to see if we could get to that point. Now, you may recall this came up a couple of years ago when the city was still doing their search for where to locate the fire station. And one of the requirements that the airport has to have that level of service is an on-airport fire station. And that was why there was some talk about could we work that together. In the end, we weren't quite the right location for the city, and there was no point trying to push a square peg into a round hole. But you know, that would be another investment that would have to be made to make that kind of a service level happen, but I think we'll get there someday. I really do. It may not be during my time on the board, but I think the way growth is coming at us from multiple directions, I could see that being a real possibility.
Again, we're speaking with Alan Dunn. He's on the Airport Authority Board. He's also a county councilman as well. So I could talk a lot about the airport because it's just, it's not something that we get to hear about, I don't think, as much as we should, because I do think that's an opportunity for our community. But we do need to switch hats a little bit because, unfortunately, a half an hour goes by really quickly here with us. So let's talk about the county council a little bit, your District 4. So tell us a little bit what's going on with the county council right now. How's that going?
Well, the council is the fiscal body for the county, so taxes are levied and assessed. You pay your taxes, that money comes in. Somebody has to decide how that money is going to get allocated. We always have more needs or wants than we have funds to do, so that's the county's responsibility to allocate those resources as they come in. So for the most part, it's a very boring job, I guess you could say, in the sense that it's just kind of like a household budget. You know what has to be done, and you allocate money accordingly. And so this year we just recently passed the budget, adopted the budget in October, that it'll go into effect for the 2025 budget. Our general fund, our primary operating budget, is a little over $15 million for calendar year 2025. But the council oversees over two dozen different budgets that, taken all together, total up to just around $40 million. So there's a lot of money to keep track of. We have a budget book that's in a binder that's, I don't know, 2 to 3 inches thick. You know, it's a big book that we go over line by line as we review the budget in primarily September in preparation for the October budget adoption. So it's a job that keeps you busy, but it's a job that requires a lot of detail and a lot of willingness to review what to some might be minutia.
Sure. Yeah, every penny counts.
Yes, right.
It really does.
And I want to say this. Our job, I guess in my time on the council, so I'm in my fifth term, and my time, what's changed maybe the most is just, I think that there's much more engagement at the department head level, and it's almost like they pre-budget for us. We have such great department heads right now that really are good stewards of the taxpayers' money, that they give us really good budgets for us to review, that the amount of changes or cuts that we have to make now versus what it would have been, say, when I took office in 2007, it's just dramatically reduced. We have such good department heads, and I want the public to know that they have such good administrators in place right now. It's the best team we've ever had during my time in county government.
That's good news. That's nice to hear.
What areas have you seen, like, I want to say a flip of funding? Because I know with the general account, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. you have the general, you have your emergency funding, you mm-hmm. have, you know, mm-hmm. you have your mm-hmm. different areas. But with the general, have you seen different areas where maybe you put so much money towards roads and that kind of stuff to where everything's in really good shape, we need to look at other areas of the funding or even just over the time period where the need has changed?
Yeah, and I know where you're going. So maybe just to give a little context. So the general fund is roughly two-thirds funded by property taxes. And then the of the remaining one-third, probably two-thirds of that one-third, as we get into the deep weeds here, is income tax, with the balance being different fees, assessments, other state taxes, things that we get a share. Like, we get every year a small share of the riverboat and casino tax that those entities pay to the state. It gets divided amongst all the counties. So we get a little bit of something like that. So those are very well set. They're very formulaic. The council doesn't have much say on how we generate our revenue, with maybe the possible exception of having an ability to change a fee here or there. So those things we have to kind of fit our spending to what we have coming in. What has changed is after, in the Daniels administration, they put the tax caps in place. The trade-off for that was that the General Assembly gave counties the ability to, knowing that they were capping revenue on property taxes, they gave the counties the flexibility to raise income taxes as needed. And it was a good move in the sense that what we need here in Clinton County may not match Boone County, may not match Hamilton County, so on and so forth. So one of the big changes has been that we have, as we've encountered a need, an area that needs additional funding, we generally have a tool in the toolbox to pass a public safety tax, for instance, income tax. That's how we funded initially the central dispatch location, was that we put in place that public safety tax and then got a joint interlocal agreement between city, county, and towns, all of the entities that receive money from that, that we would jointly put our money towards funding central dispatch. The one that we're struggling with the most right now, and we're doing okay, we're getting through, but we're tight, is EMS. And that's because, you know, this county made a commitment a decade ago or more that we weren't just going to have EMTs, we were going to have paramedics, that if you needed to have an ambulance respond to you, that you were going to be able to get the same level of care as if you went into the emergency room. So we have an ALS, which is an Advanced Life Safety Response. I believe that's the right acronym, and I apologize if I'm off a little bit, but it's Advanced Life Safety. So our people can do anything that the nurse in the hospital could do to triage you if an ambulance arrived at your accident or heart attack, God forbid, you know, at your house. But those are expensive. Those people are in such high demand right now that that what it costs to hire a paramedic or an EMT is really staggeringly high, because we're competing with hospitals, we're competing with every other medical service in the county looking for that same small cohort of workers. So that's the one thing that where I've seen a shift, more of our public safety dollars have gone maybe towards EMS as we've tried to really bulk up that program, not just the personnel, but our facilities. We have that wonderful EMS headquarters building at the fairgrounds. We've added a facility at Mulberry. We've added a facility at Boylston now that wasn't here 15 years ago, none of those. But now we can assure anyone in the county, no matter where you are, that you're going to get a rapid response. And so that was something that was really important to the county leadership, both commissioners and council. And I want to commend especially Commissioner Ewitz, who really was the spearhead and the lead on that had the vision for, you know, his vision of many years ago is where we are today. And it's kind of exciting to see that having all come to fruition.
Again, County Councilman Alan Dunn is our guest today on Party Line. And I'm wondering how your background in the farming industry affects some of the decisions you make, because, you know, farmers pay a lot of taxes. Yeah. If you own a lot of ground, you're going to pay a lot of taxes. And so talk about that a little bit.
Well, quite frankly, that's why I'm on the council, is that as a farmer who was sending a large property tax bill in, I wanted to have a say over how that money got spent, and decided to run for an open seat that had previously been held by another farmer, Terry Myers. And I felt at the time that it was important that agriculture continue to have a voice in that body. And but once you're there, you, to some degree, you have to be able to take that personal hat off and realize you're not there to represent your farm. You're not there to represent just farmers. You're there to represent all the taxpayers in the district. And so you have to take all of that into account as you review everything that's coming in front of you. But largely, my focus has always been to be as efficient as we can be, to encourage, you know, our departments to be as efficient as they can be. You know, one of the things that I take a lot of pride in that I think has changed during my time on the council, and this is not just me, this is the councils in general, and I'm proud to have been a part of it, is that there was a time when we had a lot of, there was a fear amongst department heads that if they didn't spend all of their money by the end of the year, they were going to get a budget cut the next year. And so there was this wasteful spending at the end of the year. We hear about it at the state level. We hear about it at the federal level. You know, you got to protect your budget or it'll be cut. And we have such a good working relationship with our department heads now that there's a trust factor in place that they spend what they need to spend, and they know that if they need to spend more next year and they can justify it, we'll support them. But we have an expectation back that you're not going to waste the money that you don't need, that it'll come back into the cash balance of the general fund or whatever. And we have such a good trusting relationship with department heads now that's really in place, and I just think that's so valuable, and it's something that's never publicized or the public would never see. But see, last year, I think, for instance, the departments in total turned back in $1 million.
Wow.
That they didn't spend. They could have gone out and bought, you know, office chairs, desks, whatever, just to say, hey, I want to make sure it looks like I spent my budget, but they turned it back. So that's really important.
Well, and talk a little bit about that. I mean, I know what you're talking about, and I know what you mean by turning it back. But explain to people that may not understand that where those funds go when they get turned back in. I think part of that goes back into that fear of, you know, I got to spend my whole budget because they're worried about they're not going to get it. But it's still there.
Yeah, the money doesn't go anywhere. It just goes back into an unappropriated cash balance. It's still there available to be spent. It's just not pre-authorized anymore. It would require another authorization for the next year. And when we review a budget in August and September in preparation for the next year, we do look at the most recent three-year history of spending. And if we see something has, you know, consistently been underutilized versus the budgeted amount, we may suggest that we cut that back. But if it's something like, you know, something that varies from year to year, and we see that, you know, we authorized 10,000 and it spent 3,000 and then 7 and then 5, we'll probably keep it at 10 because we don't know, you know, this is maybe a terrible example to use, but it's a real world example. Autopsies in the coroner's budget. There's no way to predict how many autopsies we'll need to have in a given year. So let's come up with a reasonable number. I don't want to budget a number that would be an absolute worst case scenario. And coroner Ed Kripe knows that if we budget low and he exceeds that number, he can come back to us and say, hey, we budgeted too low, I need some more, and the council is going to work with him on that. Yeah. And so, you know, those are the kind of discussions we have with the department heads as we go through literally line by line all of the departmental budgets.
Well, and like you said, some of those funds that are that you didn't use all the funds the year before, and those go into a cash fund. And you just go through, I don't want to call it red tape, it just takes a little time. You got to go through the state and do an appropriation, ask mm-hmm. for that appropriation and explain why and where you're going to use it and all that kind of stuff.
But right. It effectively goes into the cash reserve if it's not spent. So as we approach the end of 2024, when we get to the end of the year, any money's not spent out of the approved budget will go back into the cash balance. And so they become part of the cash reserves. And to your point, we will have already approved next year's budget. If they need to have a spending item beyond what we've already approved, there is a process where they come to the council, ask for that additional money, explain what it's going to be used for. The council votes on it. And we even in turn have to send that on down to the state, who reviews it to make sure that we have the revenue or cash balance to support this additional spending. So there's multiple layers of protections on how public money is spent.
Unfortunately, we have hit our time today. It goes fast, doesn't it?
It does go fast.
Yeah. But we would love to have you back again sometime. Yeah, it's sure. always good to hear from you. And we've been wanting for quite some time to have somebody talk about the airport and to hear from you. So thank you so much. I know Harvest.
You're very
welcome. I asked him initially at Harvest. He's like, Sam, it's Harvest. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. I totally get it. I'm so sorry.
Yeah,
so.
I got a couple of things. Well, sort of. I just want to get your feeling, your opinion. We're going, you know, Harvest went. I don't know about you, but did it seem like, even though it was dry, we had the great weather, we had sunshine and everything else, but did it seem like it took forever?
Well, there was no breaks.
Yeah.
It was just start and you went until you were done. And so I think that's what you got so tired that it just felt like it was taking a long time. But it was a remarkably smooth harvest, there's no doubt.
Now, this is my next question, because a lot of crops were coming out of the fields dry,
mm-hmm.
which is, we see that very rarely, that, you know, something, it doesn't have to go through the dryer to be harvested. What are your thoughts on, one, how it's going to keep? Because there were some issues out in the fields with some, you know, fungus and a couple other things. But how do you think it's going to keep? And what are your thoughts on the markets going into 2025?
Well, how it's going to keep, that's a really important question that I would encourage everybody to, you know, routinely go at least open that bin lid at the top and take a whiff. You know, the first indication that you're going to have a problem will be that smell that would come out of there. You'll be able to smell a little sweet or sour smell if you're going to have an issue. I do, on our farm, even if it was just going through really quickly, I did try to run the corn through the dryer just for that very reason, that I do feel like there's a benefit to, if there were any living organisms on that, you know, fungus or anything that might have been on that kernel, that I want to heat it up and try to sterilize, I guess, for lack of a better term, that crop before I put it into a bin. So there's different mindsets on how to handle that. You know, the reality is a lot of the issues are going to be moot if you're going to get that corn or soybean out of there in January through March. You know, if you put it in there, you get it cooled and you get it out quickly in the spring, you're probably not going to have any problem.
Well, thank you for coming in, and I'm going to extend the if you're not in the field when we have Ag Day.
Oh, sure.
I want you to come on Ag Day.
Okay. But I'd be happy to.
Yeah, that'd be great to have you on for Ag Day as well. So,
County Councilman and Airport Authority Board, Alan Dunn, thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you and your family
And to you.
All right. And we'll come in up. Free Play is coming up at 10 o'clock right here on WILO and Boone 1027. Have a great day, everybody.